Thought for today. Genius shines through enthusiasm. Genius shines through enthusiasm. Genius shines through enthusiasm. Many times we see people who are very enthusiastic about life. They just seem to bubble over and enjoy life and enjoy everything that life has to offer to them. They're just so enthusiastic about life. They're enthusiastic about everything they do. And it's a joy to be around them. And then sometimes it's tiring to be around them because they're just always on top of it. They're always bubbling. Well, now there are two types of genius. One genius is a genius that is an exhibitionist that wants to show itself off. The other genius is the natural, humble, unobtrusive genius that just is, that you just have to admire because it is so innocent. It is so joyful to see. When a little child says to you, I know it, and you are irritated, you first say to a little child, you're a genius, you know, that was very intelligent. Which, thank you, I know it. You know, it bugs the hell out of you. It makes you feel he needs a little humility. And he doesn't really need humility. We need humility in listening to a genius, because a genius is not inhibited. A genius gets out there and shines and smiles and does beautiful things. And we are inhibited if we are not a genius. If we're not a genius, we look at these people who are so outgoing and so giving of themselves, so sharing and just so open, that they're putting on a show. They're pretending to be something they're not. And of course, that's not true. The genius has natural enthusiasm about him. Ellen has been calling her grandchildren geniuses. And as you talk to them, they just sparkle forth with their genius. They sparkle forth with their intelligence. They sparkle forth with their talent of playing the sports. They sparkle forth with their intelligence of being able to talk with their parents on any subject at all. It doesn't matter what the subject is. They know the topic. Now, a genius is not limited by information. And this is what I want us to be very much aware of. To be intelligent presumes information. To be a genius presumes a personal inner awareness of being able to know all things that you wish to know. Now, a child, to have a discussion with adults, is limited from not having the experience that adults have gained over the years. And the adults may be talking about building a barn. And they may say, now in building this barn, we have to have nails, and we have to have hammers, and we have to have wood, we have to have a saw, we have to have a plan, and we have to have a foundation, and we have to build on that foundation, this barn. And the barn is not as finished as the house is, because it just keeps, so to speak, the elements off of whatever is in the barn. So the barn is not built with insulated walls, although that would be the most intelligent thing one could do. The barn is not built with proper windows and ventilation, because you just open up the hayloft vent or the door and let some air in, but virtually there are very few windows in a barn normally. Now, if you had a child, and this child were discussing with his parents building a barn, and the parents were to allow the child to be however genius it may be, the child would come up with something like, well, in this barn now, how can I look outside if there are no windows? Well, that's a good point. But what do you want to look outside for? Well, if you have a barn and you don't have any windows, then it's dark in there. You have to have the lights on. And if you're going to have a workbench, you're going to have lights over the workbench. But if you have a window there, you'd have lights over the window. Hey, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Now, you see, the kid is just being perfectly logical, perfectly reasonable. You say, well, what kid would have that kind of intelligence? Any kid that you expect it from. And then you say, well, you're building the stalls now for the horses. And the horses are going to have a wonderful stall. And so the kid says, well, Dad, we're building this stall for the horse, but some of those horses are kind of rambunctious and they like to kick. And if you put the board on the outside of the stall, the horse can kick the board off the stall. If you put the board on the inside of the stall, the horse will not kick the board off the stall because it's better to kick the board against the 2x4s up there that hold it in place. My God, where did the kid get that wisdom? You know, where did the kid get that understanding? I hadn't even thought of that, you know. I just thought each stall build the boards on the outside. But the kid, the genius, is not limited by what is normally done, because the kid may not have seen it normally done. But he says, put the board on the inside, and then the horse won't kick. Now, how many stables have you been in? How many places have you been in where they have a place for the horses on the inside? And how many of you have ever noticed all the boards are on the outside? And the horses are always kicking off the boards, and the farmers are always pounding the boards back on. Now, if they had listened to their son or daughter in the conversation, accepting their native genius, their native intelligence, without the inhibitions of tradition, they would have thought to put the boards on the inside of the stall, and then the horse wouldn't kick it out. And if you have several stalls, you have the boards on the inside of each stall. So that means double boarding for the stalls. But we can't afford double boarding, but you can afford putting up new boards all the time, huh? If you have these boards on each side of the stall, well, now what about the outer wall? Well, same thing goes there. If you want the horse to kick the outer wall off and have the boards splintered on the outside of the barn, which is even more expensive, put them on both sides for the height of the stall, on the inside. Well, now, Herb, where'd you get this crazy idea? Well, I talk to children. I talk with children about ideas, about simple ideas. I don't always talk to children about deep, esoteric ideas of spiritual principles and things like that. Although, this is a spiritual principle. This is listening to your inner self, listening for your inner guidance. Well, Dad, let's build a barn. All right, son. What do you think we should do? Now, here we have the stall. How should we build the stall? Well, put the boards on the inside so the horses don't kick them out. Good, smart idea. And now, how should we do this? How should we build the cow racks where the cows stick their head in there? Well, if you have the cow racks made in such a way that each cow has his name above the rack, he will just naturally go in there and stick his head in the hole that has his name over it. Oh, come on now. Look, the cow has as much intelligence as a dog. The cow has as much intelligence as lots of things. Give it credit for its intelligence. If you teach a pig, how to be a dog, the pig will be an exquisite dog. And who ever thinks of a pig as having intelligence? Well, only farmers who raise pigs, because they realize those pigs are very intelligent. They will not let themselves get interested in those pigs because they know the pigs are made just for slaughter. But a cow is your buddy. A cow gives milk day after day after day, sometimes twice a day. And a cow gives milk for years, and a cow gives calves that give milk, that make food and other things. Trust these instruments. Well, now, I don't want to get attached to them. Well, you don't want to get attached to your daughter. And your daughter might walk across the street and be killed in an accident. And so, big deal. You don't eat your daughter like you eat a cow. But death is still a change or transition from having them with you to not having them with you. So go ahead, get attached to the cow, get attached to the horses. You do it with the horses, and the horses too have a lifespan. And you get attached to dogs. And what is the average lifespan of a dog? 10 to 14 years, and usually shorter, because the dog runs across the street, or the dog has a problem. And cats, who knows what their lifespan is, but nobody in their right mind takes a cat to a veterinarian. A cat is an outside creature that you love or enjoy, maybe you have it inside, but you don't take it to the vet. Well, now we do. Now we have small animal vets because the animals are being treated like something worthwhile, something that has more to their life than just the span that they are. It's easy to bury a dog or bury a cat because you don't get as close to them, although some people do. Now, the genius of a child is, I love you, and I love you, and I love you, and then if the dog dies, you get another one. And then you immediately transfer that great love you had for the first dog to the second one. This is a child's genius. This is what a child teaches an adult. This is the genius shines through us when we allow ourselves to be more, if you will, childlike. But what do? We learn tradition. We learn to do things in a certain way. And the moment we begin to learn to do things in a certain way, we cut off our genius. And when we cut off our genius, we cut off our enthusiasm. And people go through life in a very, very negative way. They go through life in a manner that they are doing things that are inharmonious. You follow what I'm saying? People begin to lose the luster for life. And when they lose the luster for life, they're losing the genius for life. They're losing that divine spark within them, which genius is, the uninhibited, wonderful spark within them that encourages all of the magnificent ideas to come forth, all of the magnificent attitudes to come forth. Now, we've been saying the other day that we should realize that anything we say can be and certainly is true. Because you cannot say anything that does not already exist. Everything you say, no matter how far out, how strange, how unique, it already exists somewhere. Whatever you say already exists in the universe, if not only in thought, perhaps in fact too. But it already exists as an idea, as a concept. And so when we begin to let our mind soar into the magnificence that it is, then we free that genius within us. And when we free that genius within us, an enthusiasm soars from our spirit. It soars from our being, and we've just become so glorious. We've become so fabulous. And marvelous things begin happening to us. Do you follow what I'm saying? Do you follow that this is our choice? When people get old, they are losing their enthusiasm for life, not because they're getting old, but they're getting old because they're losing their enthusiasm for life. You don't get the reason that you lose your enthusiasm for life is because you're old. You lose your enthusiasm for life and then you get old. You lose your enthusiasm for life and then you get sick. You lose your enthusiasm for life and then you get cancer. You lose your enthusiasm for life and then you have problems. When you can continue and contain that enthusiasm for life and use it every moment of your life, every day, be a bubble, be a sparkle, you will not have these problems. You have the problems only when you feel sorry for yourself, only when you lose your enthusiasm for life. You have conditions in your life which make you unhappy. You feel that you are not arriving at your spiritual mastership quick enough, and you're dedicating so much of your life to arriving at that spiritual mastership. You don't see it. You can't see your spiritual mastership because you got your eyes closed. You have your eyes closed. And why do you have your eyes closed? Because you've lost your enthusiasm. If you had encouraged your enthusiasm, bubbled your enthusiasm, developed your enthusiasm for life, do you know what would happen? You would be a spiritual master right now, and you would recognize it. But because you have lost that enthusiasm, because you have lost that bubble for life, you won't recognize it when you're there. You won't recognize how wonderful you are, because you'll be saying to yourself, hush. You'll be saying to yourself, I shouldn't have these thoughts. You're saying to yourself, I shouldn't have these thoughts. You're saying to yourself, I shouldn't be concerned. And what does it mean that I shouldn't be concerned, that I shouldn't have these thoughts? What does that mean? It only means that this is the tradition that you have been living your life with. This is the tradition that you have been going around the world doing things about. Now the dogs sense something and they're barking. It could be the cat who has followed Ingeborg down here. It could be a coyote. It could be anything. But whatever it is, it's of no consequence. It's just something that has sparked the dog's enthusiasm. Oh boy, a cat. Oh, something to chase. Oh, something wonderful. Oh, and those cats, they love to be chased. That's why they come down here. They don't come down here because they just want to be with Ingeborg. That may have been the drawing card. But once they got here, they thought, now where are those dogs? Let's see if we can get those dogs to bark, because that's fun. That's a joy. That's an enthusiasm. That's wow time. Now, we don't want that in our morning talk, because the barking dogs can be disturbing on the tape. So what we do is we say to the cats, stay at the house now. We say to the cats, you stay here now. This is where you are living, and they're living there. And when we say that to them, then perhaps the first time they may not follow it, but they'll follow it. Give them an opportunity to listen to you. The cats have intelligence. In fact, they have a very lot of intelligence. They get up on the roof above the reach of the dog, and they look down and say, oh, you silly boys, you can't do what I can do. I can jump up on the roof here. And their enthusiasm is so wonderful. And you know, Ellen, no matter how old a cat may be, he can still jump up on the roof. Isn't it interesting? No matter how old a cat may be, he can still climb a tree. He can still do all the things that cats do, not because he's old or young, but because it's what's expected of him. Now, if we go to our cats and say, well, now you're old, so you can't climb trees anymore, and you can't run anymore, and you can't, well, the cat will do that. The cat will live up to our expectations, because we are taking away their enthusiasm for life. We are taking away the spiritual entity that is within them, and that spiritual entity is the joy of being excited about life, partaking in life. Why can a cat climb a tree? Because that's part of his game. He likes to be chased. Why can a dog not climb a tree? Because that's part of his game. He can't go up the tree after the cat. Why is it that a monkey climbs a tree? Well, that's part of his game. Well, why does a monkey not have claws like a cat does to make it easy for him to go up the tree? Well, this is part of the game that we designed in having monkeys be monkeys. And everything has their wonderful quality about it, their genius about it. And we want to learn to sparkle that genius, and we're not so interested in sparkling it in other people and in animals and things like that, but in ourselves. Now, when we can sparkle this genius, we call it enthusiasm, within ourselves, what are we doing? What we're doing is we're opening up that inner reservoir of who we are, of our divine self. We're opening up that magical inside self that we are, and we're letting it out. And that magical inside self of ourself, now, Sylvia just got up to go and check what the dogs were doing. Now, if Sylvia would let her enthusiasm loose, you know what she'd do? She'd just mentally go out and see what's going on, if that was her choice. Or she would just mentally say to the dog, "That's enough. Lay down." Because Sylvia is the master of the dog. Right, Sylvia?
Yes.
Sylvia is the master. But when we allow the dog to be the master of us, then we chase after them and we try to see what they're doing and try to find out what they're doing. And what we really want to do is, the moment we recognize their attention is diverted, we immediately speak our word and say, "Peace. Relax. Peace." Now, love is a perfect example of that. Love is a young dog. He's less than 2 years old. Button is 5 years old. So love seems to have sharper ears. And love picks up things. And then he starts to bark. And then Button wakes up and he says, "Oh yes, I'll bark." And so then Button goes out after the event. But love just likes to encourage Button to go and do different things. He's Button's button for enthusiasm. And so he presses Button's button for enthusiasm, and Button goes enthusiastically out after the various things. And Button is in no rush to come back because he's just having a good time. But you see, love does that. Love does that. Love encourages that enthusiasm in Button. Now, is that a beneficial enthusiasm? Sometimes, sometimes not. So we say, "Love, relax, be at peace." "Button, relax, be at peace." We're the masters. That's an enthusiasm too. We want to always be in charge of our life. Always be in control of our life. That doesn't mean we manipulate our life. But it means that we create in our world of experience all of the experiences that we want. And we create them by our thought. We create them by our attitude. We create them by our choice. Now, are you ready for such a creation? Are you ready for such a choice? If you are, then start cranking up your enthusiasm. Can you do that? Can you do that?
Yes.
Now, when this girl told the story in Ellen's seminar about her daughter, who was such a marvelous, unconditionally loving creature, and the story turned on everyone in the seminar, everyone in the audience, they all said, "Oh, what a lovely girl. Oh, too bad she had to die so young." Hey, that was her game. She chose to come on this earth for that period of time to do those things in that time, and then to get on about her business with other things that she wanted to do. But that's just sort of giving nothing to something and something to nothing, and it doesn't mean a thing, you know. Hey, you're the creator of your world. You're the creator of every experience in your world. You're the creator of every attitude in your world. And if you have your eyes open when an attitude is going by or an experience is going by, and you take from that experience whatever you want from it, that's okay. Now, are you taking from that experience everything that could be gotten from it? No. You're only taking from it what your enthusiasm tells you. Now, you're walking down the street, and a dog goes roaring by you, and you think to yourself, "That is a dog who just went roaring by me." And then you go on with your other thinking. Or you say, "Wow, that is a dog that just went roaring by me, and I see it chasing a cat up that tree, and it's barking, barking, barking. What enthusiasm." Then you say, "Oh, that is a dog that just went roaring past me and chasing a cat up that tree, and that's my cat." Now all of a sudden, a new enthusiasm sparkles your life. You go to that dog and say, "Now, hush, stop it. Don't go chasing my cat up the tree." And then, of course, the firemen have to go and get the cat out of the tree. But the cat could come down perfectly well when it chooses. Cats climb trees from sunrise to sunset and after and before. And they come down when they want, and they go up when they want, and it's we who worry about them. Does a cat ever fall and hurt itself? Sometimes, but rarely. A cat falls and hurts itself only when we create it doing that. It's like the barn with the boards on the outside of the stall, and the horse kicks the boards away from the stall again and again and again. The farmer does not wake up to the fact that he should put the boards on the inside of the stall. To this day, they don't build them that way. To this day, you think that they would wake up to that fact. And to this day, they're always replacing the boards in the stall where the horses have been kicking them or leaning against them and pushing them out. Why don't the farmers learn? Well, maybe there's another side to the story that I have not reported to you. Maybe there's another side to that. I doubt it. When people build barns today, they have money. A barn is not being built because it's as cheap as it can be. It's built because tradition. I want a barn out there. And the barn has stalls in it. And the barn has this and that and the other. And, hey, my God, what a classy barn with boards on the inside of the stall. You know, with boards on the inside of the stall, you don't have that 2x4 up there to lay the currying brush. You don't have the 2x4 up there to put the comb on it. You don't have the 2x4 up there to put a nail to it so you can hang up the tack and keep it in the stall, you know. You want to keep the halter in there. You want to keep the bridle. You want to keep all these things in there, you know. Well, who says that? You have a lovely barn, and you have what's called a tack room. And in the tack room, you keep all these things. You keep all the harnesses, you keep all the saddles, you keep all these things, and you keep them out of the barn because the barn is a very dry thing most of the time, and it saps the saddles of their moisture, the reins and so forth of the moisture, and they don't stay as long as they could. Now, you talk to a kid, he'd explain all this to you. He'd explain all this to you. And he'd explain, and you'd say, but that's expensive. And he'd say, no, it isn't, Dad. If we do this, we're not going to have to buy that. And putting a few boards up is cheaper than buying tack. And the father would say, well, son, it's not tradition, so we can't do it. And then they don't do it. But we went to look at a barn the other day over here at some property we were looking at. And inside the stable, inside the barn, were boards inside the stalls and outside the stalls. Now, you look at you say, my, they got money. No, they got intelligence. Because they built that stall so that the horses aren't going to kick it away. They took nice wood. They took beautiful things. They made it something that they're proud of. And it's not just a place to catch dust. You see, if your enthusiasm can carry you into your brilliance, everything works out for you. But when your enthusiasm leads you into another direction, then go that direction, whatever direction it may be. And if you're walking your spiritual path and you want your enthusiasm to lead you on your spiritual path, then follow it. Follow it, follow it, follow it. And when you follow it, do you know what's going to happen to you? You're going to be so happy. You're going to be so content. And you're not going to realize you're enthusiastic. I go into my brother's house or my brother-in-law's house, and I stand there in the kitchen, and their sinks need a little loving attention, and I'll take a cloth and wipe it down. They'll say, hey, you don't have to do that. And yes, I do. I'm just doing something while I'm standing talking to you. I could give them my total attention, but I give them my total attention much easier when I divert their attention. And I divert their attention by polishing up a little bit on their stove or their sink or their cabinets. And as I do that, I have their 100% attention for whatever I wish to use it for. And I use it because that's what a genius does. He shines through his enthusiasm. And you got full control of your world when you're shining through your enthusiasm and doing it in a beautiful, knowing way. kind of interesting, isn't it? Let your genius shine through your enthusiasm and just watch what's going to happen to your spiritual life. I love you. You're wonderful beings. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. And so it is.